This is Optimus Prime, and you're listening to All Things Transformers.
Welcome to... Oh, wait, that's not my voice.
The Transformers, more than meets the eye. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons. The Transformers... The Transformers, more than meets the eye. The Transformers.
Hello and welcome to All Things Transformers. This is episode 167. I'm, of course, TFG and Mike. Jimmy is the obvious creator of the show, Steve Megatron. Hello, sir.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
Yes, and we have a very special guest this evening. We have... Alex grinding in the gears, Richie. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. I'm very special.
Yes. We are all special here.
And we are here because Alex was able to get a review copy of the Everytunes Records release of the Transformers Generation 1 television score.
Yeah, it was weird. It's one of those things where I was looking for the movie soundtrack because it had been reissued, I think, was it a couple years ago for the 30th anniversary, you know, special vinyl. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, I'm not a super big collector, but I do have a decent record player. And I was like, it would be kind of neat to have. And when I was scrolling through the Amazon listings, I went, wait, there's another vinyl album? And I'm like, okay, well, maybe that's just like, from first glance, I'm like, okay, maybe that's just the score, like just the Vince DiCola stuff, like just, and oh, wait, no, it's the TV show. And like, that had never been released before, as far as I knew.
It hadn't until Everytunes Records released it. Like you said, I think last year or something.
Yeah.
I know the DiCola score, like you said, got released for the 30th anniversary, and I don't have the vinyl of that, but I have it on digital. So
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, you can argue with vinyl. You get the little, you know, clicks and pops occasionally and hiss and that, which, you know, to me, I think it's kind of fun because anybody can listen to a digital track and, you know, hear it be pristine and perfect, but it adds something to the nostalgia factor for me to hear it like that. But the big thing for me is the artwork, like just having the physical big, you know, 12-inch art. You know, you don't get that with digital. And if they give you like a, you know, an image of it online, it's not the same as being able to pick something up and look at it. So when I went, I did a little research. I'm like, who put this out? And I'm like, okay. You know, it's a small label that they have a few different labels that they run under. There's Enjoy the Tunes, Enjoy the Ride Records. And I contacted them because they're putting out a lot of stuff that's like, They had like the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, but like not Mortal Kombat from the movies, like from the arcades. Like they're doing weird things like that. And their newest release coming out is the soundtrack for Elvira. Yeah, her movie. And I'm like, that's like a deep cut. They did Tales from the Crypt. You know, obviously it's a lot of Halloween themed stuff right now. But and they have like the Fresh Prince of Bel Air single, like in a 45 single, or the Cheers theme, and like the vinyl will be colored to make it look like beer or something like that. So when I reached out to them, I said, hey, you know, can we check this out, because this is interesting. And they were able to work out a deal to send one up here, which, you know, I forgot how expensive it is to send things through the mail from the States to Canada when it's like a large, you know, vinyl that can be fragile. So, you know, it eventually made its way up here and was in, you know, pristine condition. And, you know, I made sure that listened to it, and then you guys had a chance to listen to it. And what did you think?
I absolutely love this stuff. I'll say this now. Anyone is a Fairweather Transformers fan, looks at the franchise at a glance, constantly complains about whatever, it constantly says, oh, the cartoon was just a giant toy commercial. No, it really wasn't. I love having the music outside of the actual show, because I've wanted this for so long, because there are so many things in that music. A couple of things I want to get out of the way here. The original theme, the opening and closing, was done by Ben Bryant and Ford Kindler. The actual score is done by Robert, I can't see that.
Robert J. Walsh.
Dig this. I think this is super cool. I like you, Alex, like with this, I don't mind hearing a little bit of the record scratch, you know, the scratches and the little, like, because it adds a unique quality to it. It's not just digital restoration, which there's nothing wrong with digital restoration, but sometimes you gotta go old school.
Yeah, it really makes it feel like you're listening to the 80s, if that makes any sense to anybody. The thing is with it, like, I'll get my two tiny little gripes with it out of the way first. There would have been room on this record, based on the length of it, to fit in the season 2 and season 3 opening themes, maybe even the closing themes, and they weren't included here. That's really the only things that I think they could have, you know, put in to improve it.
What did you think, Steve, when you first heard this?
I really enjoyed it. I, coming from someone who enjoyed the series, it's really funny when you sit down and listen to it, though, because you can listen to elements of the tracks as it kind of weaves in and out of each different tone, and you can actually picture the episodes happening while you're listening to it, of where that would have fit. You know, like the Optimus Prime theme whenever he shows up, or, you know, the the generic one that kind of just happens whenever something's going on. And it was really cool listening to it, and I liked how it got more quasi season two, season three at the towards the end of the second side. But yeah, I have to agree that my only gripe is they didn't put the season three and I think season two intro. I didn't hear that one either.
Yeah, season two wasn't in there, but like if you had to skip one of the intros, maybe season two you could have skipped. But season three, I feel, is the that's what I want to hear with like clean audio. Exactly.
Yeah, that's like my favorite theme out of them all, just because when I started watching Generation One, it was on the Sci-Fi Channel and it was reruns, like in the early 90s, and they had season three on there a lot. And season two would show up occasionally, as would season one, but I primarily saw season three episodes on there. And so like for me, that kind of resonated more. And so I really enjoyed the upbeat music, and it fit very well after, you know, post movie universe.
Now I'll let you guys in on a little, you know, a little secret that sort of like might shatter my nerd cred a bit. I had never seen G1 as a TV show until I was like nearly 15, 16, 17, or maybe even older. As a little kid, the first thing I ever saw was the movie, and we had it on Betamax. And I still have that cassette. I don't have a Betamax player. But my dad had gone to the video store and rented another Transformers video cassette, which on like VHS, and then through some magic trickery, you know, made a copy to our Betamax machine. And it was the Five Faces of Darkness, like from season three. He edited them all together so that it only had one intro. And he presented it to me as like, when I was like 5 years old, as Transformers the Movie 2. So I literally only thought that there were two movies and that there were no TV shows. Because you have, like, unless you're, when you're six or seven, you have no idea. So I didn't know that it was an actual TV show, probably around after Beast Wars came out, or even later.
Wow.
So to me, I didn't know that Transformers had a different theme song other than season three.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, because from what I can tell from this release and from their information, as far as I remember, season one and season two, the theme was pretty much the same. So you're probably getting that one theme already both seasons. Because I know, obviously, as you said, season three is different. Season three is all new, all different. But, I mean, some of the animation changed in the season two opening, but I don't think the actual theme song changed.
Yeah, season two had the one where it starts like bum, 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 bum. Yeah. Bum, 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 bum. And then it goes into the first, like, season's theme with that background music. But yeah, it's pretty much very similar. It just has a slightly different intro to it. But yeah, like, it was kind of funny that, like, I went through all my childhood years not even realizing that there was, like, 100 episodes or more of that show. You know what I mean? Like, I thought there were these two movies. And, you know, one of them, my dad had just written Transformers 2 on it.
There were, which is, if you think, well, originally it was supposed to have 100 episodes.
Yeah.
But sadly, Rebirth got cut. Rebirth was supposed to be a 5-parter, but they cut it to a 3-parter. So it ends on a really weird number. I mean, yeah, it isn't 98, obviously, is an even number, but that's really weird to end any TV show on that.
And I know for syndicated purposes, they ended up cutting the movie down and making it into like 5 parts. So when they sold it for like syndicated packages, the show ended up having like 103 episodes or something weird like that.
Yeah. But no, listening to this for the first time outside of it's initially in, and I love it. It's like, I love when they released the movie score by Vince. We finally got clean versions of all of the majority of all of the tracks from the film. And Yeah, I just love that companies will do this kind of stuff. I think it's really super cool that they did this.
Well, and also it's like we're in a weird space now where it's like this isn't released on CD. This isn't released on like iTunes or a digital platform. It's by a boutique vinyl company putting out not superly crazy price, like $25 American, you know, vinyl pressings that you're not going to know about unless you're a super fan. So it's like, this is this weird space where like the super fan will find it, but I'm willing to bet that like 90% of super fans like us didn't even know about it. And it's just, I just stumbled across it on an Amazon listing.
Didn't it come out last year?
I think so.
I think it might have.
I want to say it did. I'm pretty sure it came out last year.
Yeah. I think it did too.
Yep. July of 2018. But either way.
I mean, hey, you know, we know.
In Canada, it was August of 2018. So, yeah. But still, the fact that, like, you know, it sort of went, I think, under the radar. And it just, you know, popped up in my radar because I was looking for something else completely. now. One thing I noticed with this is when you listen to the show as a kid, you think, oh, it just has regular cartoon music. But then you go and listen to this now in the clean version. You're like, wait a minute. They didn't just do like the standard, like, you know, stuff that Filmation or other crappy cartoon companies used to do where they put like really generic music. There's a lot of composed pieces here that aren't just like the standard, I don't know, background music. This is like slightly, you know, computerized, like with synths, but most of it is like jazz music. It's like, it's like traditional jazz. And I never like really would have noticed it had I not listened to it, you know, separately.
That's the cool thing about being able to listen to the music that's in whatever show, cartoon, live action, whatever. That's the greatest thing about being able to listen to it separately. You hear everything. You don't just hear the little clips of, Transformers will be right back after this, or whatever it is for those opening and closings for going, you know, the bumpers. That was one of the coolest things about the Vince DiCola score that they had, not this company, but the other company had released. I think Entrada Records had released that back in 2014. The cool thing about that was the track called Closing In, which is where they're trying to escape Galvatron and all of that and everything else, where Cyclonus attacks. I can hear the music as I'm watching the movie, but I don't pick anything out of it because you have all the sound effects and the vocals and the whatever. Hearing the track is like, hey, there is so much more here.
For sure. I know that, you know, before we recorded this, we had a bit of a discussion on you didn't care for, or you thought it was weird, the season one intro at the beginning of this record, how it sounded off to you.
Yeah, I always think that because it's the original recording. It's not what we saw on TV, because on TV, they changed it. They did whatever they did to it.
Yeah, like I was doing some like listening to it and then finding clips on YouTube where, you know, somebody tries to get the best quality copy they can of just the intro, mm-hmm. and listening to them back and forth. And what I can tell is on the TV show, even though like the sound effects and everything might have been in stereo, they mixed everything down to mono. And then they did some compression stuff to it so that it, like the low parts are higher sounding and the high parts are lower sounding. So it sounds a little more monotone. And in doing that, they sort of muffled up some of the layers of the vocals specifically. And then you add a whole bunch of stuff like all the sound effects and the explosions and just all the craziness that's happening on screen, that your eyes follow what the screen is doing. So you're not really listening as deeply into it as you would if it was just a pure audio track. So listening to it, I'm like, there's stuff that we hear in this version that you would just not have heard. Like there's a whole male and female voice that I don't remember ever hearing in the TV show.
I don't remember hearing it at all either. Yeah. Steve, thoughts?
Well, yeah. I mean, there were sounds that I don't remember hearing when I watched it originally, and I think that's like what you guys were saying, that you're paying attention to everything else going on. It's not even registering with you. And plus, it, you know, it's also buried by the dialogue and the explosions and everything else going on. So I mean, it's really cool to hear how it all actually sounds pure and clean. Although this is like a fan dubber's dream to have this, but
well, I was thinking, like, think about how many people have made, you know, their YouTube videos or whatever, and they're using, you know, little clips here and there, you know, for fair use purposes, and they've had to like manipulate it as best they can to cut out things or whatever. This is like the cleanest you're ever going to get.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, short of them releasing, you know, digital copies of those master tapes, you know, and I can't see them, like the market for that's even smaller than, like, there's more people out there that would want to collect the vinyl, you know, as like a collector's item than would want to collect just a pure digital file, unless they're like you or I or other podcasters.
I mean, here's my thing. Like I said, I love that they released it on vinyl. I wish they would have released the vinyl copy on digital as well. Not digitize it, release it as it is. Record it into your computer as it is, yep, off of the record, and hear those scratches, hear this, hear that intermittence between the tracks.
Some companies have done that. Sometimes you buy a vinyl now and it'll come with like an iTunes download, but that, I'm not even counting that. I purchased it was the first album from Rush, the Canadian band, and it was for their 40th anniversary. And it came with a digital download code. And I went, okay. So I figured it would download from iTunes. Well, no, it downloaded from their server, whatever it was. And it was literally like a recording of the vinyl. Like it, and it was, you know, not of your particular vinyl, but like they in the studio recorded one of the vinyl records to, you know, a digital track. And that's what they gave out as a digital copy to people.
And yeah, see, that would be very cool.
Yeah. I mean, and it wouldn't take up much because it's not that much storage space it would use. It'd be kind of neat if they did that.
Would yeah, also I could see that. Be very cool to do that, but it would also be very cool if you searched this on like Spotify or something. It just pops up like, hey, here you go. Like, here's the.
You know what? That might actually. I think because this is a smaller boutique company, they're not even like owning the rights in perpetuity. Like if you look at their releases, they'll be like, we're making 500 of these and that's all they're licensed to make.
Yeah.
So like what is cool though, is that their stuff doesn't sell out like immediately fast. Like it's not impossible to get their things. So like they're not doing such a limited run that there's no chance of you getting it. But like of this, they had the Megatron Splatter, Optimus Prime Splatter. That's just to get the different colors of the vinyl. Those sold out. Those were the first pressings. I had an option of, they're like, what would you like us to send you? We have Optimus Prime, Megatron, and Starscream Split. And I went, Megatron. And, you know, between those, if you go to their website, when you buy things, they do show how much they have in stock of each one. And it's not like they're making them like different prices for each. It's just, you know, they'll have a pre-order price for special editions and that's about it. But I think the fact that they went into a second pressing here, some of their stuff has only ever gotten one pressing, means that they're selling enough to warrant, you know, renewing their licenses for it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, and the other thing, like, if with this doing well, it leaves me optimistic for like a Beast Wars one down the road.
And that's what I was going to get to, is that's the one I think a lot of people like. They like this, but a lot of people would want that one because, you know, I don't think we really like subconsciously even think about how good the soundtrack was for Beast Wars. Like we might, but like the average fan doesn't. Like you remember a couple things. Like you remember the sort of exploring the jungle type music they would play.
Oh yeah.
But other than that, you know, what pops out of your mind right away is because it was blended so well into the show that you don't really know. But I know they put a lot of, you know, time and effort into all those tracks too.
Same thing with Beast Machines. I mean, I remember the music from Beast Machines way more than I do Beast Wars. And I love both series. But like you said, the jungle music, some of the calmer music, main theme from Beast Wars. But Beast Machines, every time they have an action scene in that show, I know those notes back to front.
Now, this might be from... because it'd be probably a different studio that owns the rights to that. But what I could see them doing, and I really hope they do, is a G.I. Joe one, because the music was shared. Some of it was between the two shows. They use similar music, but there is some incidental music that's very different for G.I. Joe. Yeah. But it would have all been produced at the same time by the same people. I guarantee it's the same composers, and it's probably in the same vault somewhere.
Maybe. What's your favorite track off of this, Alex?
Because they all blend together to me. From the first side, let me see. I'm going to look at the title. It's like the second or third song. Bridge to Icon's good. What is the one? I'm drawing a blank. Okay. You'll probably be able to remember it based on my description of the episode I remember it from. You remember in, it might have been season 3. I know the songs would have been used in earlier seasons, but where the song sticks out most to me in season 3, when they go to, what was it? The planet that was doing the, like the Olympics or something. And they had that one alien that goes and sabotages everything. He's riding that weird little ship.
That was the Octane and Sandstorm episode.
Yeah. Okay, that song. That song sounds so crisp and clear. But you know what I'm saying? I just can't remember the order on the record, because I'm listening to it side by side and it blends together, and there are similar motifs between them. But that and also the song that is used, I think, in the pilot in the very first episode, when they're just before they even get to Earth, when they're being chased on Cybertron. And that's used very, very often in the show.
That opening track after the theme with the Cybertronian music thing, the really wailing, screaming thing in the very beginning, I'm like, oh, wow, that is so crisp.
Yeah. The other thing, I don't know about you guys, but the second half of Side B, is that all like conceptual stuff that wasn't used in the show? Because it sounds very different.
Yeah, I think it is, because I was listening to it and I wasn't familiar with any of it. And like, it sounded very season 3-esque.
Yeah, it has there's some certain melodies in the background that sound familiar, but it almost sounds like this was music that was written down but never actually recorded, and then they had somebody record it later, or it was because it doesn't even sound like it's from the 80s. It sounds like 80s music recorded now.
So I'm looking at the Side B track listing on their website. I can tell you one reason why some of these may feel like season 3. They are, most likely. Track B8 is Mad Planet. I bet that's from the episode where
Darkness.
No, it's Web World, when Galvatron goes nuts. Let's see here, from the secret. The other reason why I know it could be season 3 from B8 on is because from the secret files of Teletran 2. It wasn't season 1 or 2. That was definitely season 3. So they might have these last few tracks here might be from season 3.
That and maybe it's the Transformers medley. Yeah, that might be unused stuff, because it just sort of abruptly go from sounding like everything else on the record to sounding very modern.
Yeah. But it's such a great thing for them to have been able to do this, for Hasbro to go to them, or they go to Hasbro and say, hey, we'd like to do this for you guys, or however that deal was made, whatever. I'm just glad it was finally out there, because we had been hearing stuff about this. Like, it came out last year, it came out in 2018. So I know I've been hearing about Hasbro releasing the original G1 score at least since 2012.
And I know that people have been asking for it. It's just, I feel like we might have seen news about it maybe a couple of years ago, and then nothing. And it just sort of, maybe life moved on and we completely, it dropped off our radar.
Yeah. Yep. And then last year, boom, here you go. It's finally here.
Yeah. And they actually put their pressing info. So they're doing 750 of each color, which, cool. That seems about right, considering, this isn't going to be a record that sells millions, obviously.
Obviously, no.
But as far as big G1 fans that also collect vinyl, that's probably the right sweet spot there. I would think 1,000 would be cool, but the fact that they've got 3 different colors, that's a pretty good, you know, diverse amount.
Absolutely. Any final thoughts, Steve?
No, like I said, I hope that it did well enough that we can see a Beast Wars or a G.I. Joe or...
See, the funny thing is, and I did look at this, Alex. Yes, you are right. The exact same composers that did this did the G.I. Joe composing as well. I swear I saw a news article 2 years ago. Maybe it was 3 years ago, right around Beast Wars 20th anniversary, where, hey, the soundtrack might be coming. Again, it was one of those stories just like this one. I saw this G1 score story where it was like, hey, this could be coming. Then it was years and years and years and nothing happened. And then, boom, all of a sudden, hey, here you go.
Well, I guess it's just one of those things, right? And it looks like if you go through the artwork on their website, they also have a ThinkGeek Bumblebee exclusive color. So I'm feeling like maybe if we had seen any article on it, it was probably through ThinkGeek. Now, I will say one thing from having it. It has a gatefold vinyl where you can open it up, and it does have a really cool piece of art in the inside. Where then it lists all your tracks. But like, if it wasn't a record, I would just like to have it as a poster. Like, that's how cool it is.
Absolutely, yeah. That is an amazing Yeah, that's an amazing shot. That's an amazing G1 art thing. Yeah, absolutely. Got all the robot modes. It's got Optimus transforming on it, and very, very cool. Yeah. The artwork that was done for this was amazing.
Oh yeah, totally. It looks like some of the art they've been reusing for quite some time, actually.
You know, it's weird, but it kind of reminds me, like, the art. I had a friend who had Transformers, bed set where like he had like bed sheets and pillowcases. That's sort of what it looked like back in the late 80s.
They used this art for everything, dude. They had bed sheets, they had towels, they quite literally used it for everything. So that's probably, probably is true that they did that. So we are getting a Titan class Omega Supreme. And then War for Cybertron Siege Gallery, Titan Class Omega Supreme. He looks kind of cool.
Now, is it going to be as crazy expensive as the Unicron?
Probably. It's probably going to be about half.
Yeah.
It's like, I see that, and I'm like, that's cool. I kind of would like to have rent money, though, instead.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Jesse Matrix Prime of TF Wire, he actually brought up something about that the other day. Can't find the exact tweet now, but he mentioned how the pricing has just seemed to kind of skyrocket, and the quality has kind of gone down, and things that you could have gotten for like a lower price point. So like a deluxe back then was like, $9.99, but they're the equivalent of like $20 now or $19.99 now. And he's like, here it is. I found it.
So did I.
Yeah, he's like $240 for five figures. This is why Transformers is in the state it's in. And then I says, yeah, I like the, Beast Wars Masterpiece, but they're super expensive and a lot of the new toys look either cheap or cost 2 to 3 times what they did 20 years ago for a small figure. He says, there's also a mixed message about the target audience. There's a cheaper, younger looking line that's just as expensive as the line targeted at collectors, i.e. the continued rehash of G1. So, I think that too, like, it's just gotten so overpriced.
It's almost like they've given up on the casual/casual collector, and they're only going for like the big whales,
which is unfortunate.
Yep. Omega Supreme is the Transformers War for Cybertron Siege Titan Omega Supreme, $160 on BigBadToyStore.com.
That's so not, he's that's not crazy. As, it, yeah. It's,
no, it, and see, here's the thing. Like, Unicron, there's no way. They had to crowdfund that. If they got it, they got it. If they didn't, they didn't, which they did. Yeah. Unicron was funded.
I'm still surprised it was.
Yeah, well, they probably pulled out some sort of tricks out of their hats. But here's the thing. Unicron at $600. Mattel did... Mattel. Mattel did Snake Mountain for $600. Yes, we would like to pay rent first before we have these things. But these other figures that aren't... Like, Unicron's friggin' large. You can't put Unicron in stores at that price. So... I know some people listening to this will say, "Oh, but he was only $575." It's still $25 off of $600.
You know, it's more like a prestige piece if you're the collector that has everything. Or, you know, I almost feel like it's for stores. If you're like a retro nostalgia pawn shoppy type, maybe gaming store, you might want to have that to be like a window display piece. Like, if you can use it as a way to entice people into your store as like a talking point. Cool. I don't really see anybody spending that kind of money on a toy, though.
I kind of gave up on him a while ago.
Now, you know, we say this, and you know what? I'm willing to bet, like, something weird will happen, and in, like, 6 years, we'll go to our local, you know, Dollar Tree, and there'll be like a Unicron sitting in a corner for a dollar because it got clearanced out by somebody. Because, you know, weird things like that have happened before.
Oh, yeah. It's happened to Unicron before.
It has.
Now, I think, earlier this week, I sent you guys a thing saying you should listen to Chris Jericho's podcast because he had Kick-Ax on to sort of bring it back to the music. You know, the band where they used a couple of their songs in the Transformers movie soundtrack, but under the different name, Spectre General. Did you guys get a chance to listen to it at all?
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, it's okay. It's basically just them reminiscing and how they were at one point sort of like the biggest rising Canadian rock/metal band, which is arguable. I think he was just playing it up because they're from the same province, but it was interesting. Basically, their management and the producer of the movie screwed them over really hard. They were paid to write the music and then told they couldn't use their name because Walmart would not sell the soundtrack or the movie if they had the name Kick-Ax, because it was too close to kick ass. Oh. And I'm like, that seems kind of harsh, but then I've heard of Walmart doing things like that before. And especially since it was the mid 80s, who knows, but apparently they do not own the rights to Nothing's Going to Stand in Our Way.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So they receive no money for that. They actually received no money. They got so screwed out of it, they received $0 from any residuals from the movie or the soundtrack at all. Because when they changed the name on there, the name of Spectre General was owned by the producers of the movie. So they basically get nothing. But they did. They ended up fighting in court, and they got the rights to Hungry. So they do play the stuff live when they go on tour. But yeah, it's one of those weird situations where it's like, wow, they got screwed and they had two of the better songs. I just thought it was interesting because, like, it's one of those bands where they disappeared for like 25 years and then they popped up sort of now out of nowhere. And just when we were getting ready to record an episode like this, Chris Jericho does a podcast with them.
Yeah, very cool. I look back on that score and I'm like, I don't know. I love the original score for the movie. I really do. And by score, I mean soundtrack. The original 86 soundtrack. Dan Bush, Vince DiCola, all that. Spectre General, Weird Al. All those 10 tracks. I'm like, I don't even, like you just said, I don't even know who the hell, like, Spectre General, never heard of them.
Because they weren't a real band.
Right, obviously, you know, yeah, again, like, you know, it's the whole Simpsons flu shot thing all over again. It's one of those things where they made it up just for this, or they did this just for that, and it's just so crazy. Song is still a great song, though.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because, like, as under their real name, like Kickaxe, they had three albums, and then they're one of those tales of management woes where their management companies basically stole all their money, didn't pay any of their bills while they were on the road, then got arrested while touring Canada, had all their gear confiscated, and went bankrupt as a band, and they weren't allowed to play for 7 years as part of the court settlement because their management team basically put everything on credit and then ran away with the money. And you don't really see that happening anymore, but that sort of stuff happened in the 70s and 80s if you really didn't have, you know, a good team you could trust. So that's why you didn't hear of them, because they did these three albums, and right when they finished the third album, they did the movie. And when they did the movie is when all this crap happened, so they just disappeared. So they couldn't even tour supporting, you know, songs for the movie or anything.
Wow.
Yeah, and then looking at the other bands in there, like, well, Stan Bush is Stan Bush. We all know him. But, like, NRG, who the hell are they? Like,
exactly, yeah.
And the thing is, they sound decent. Like, they sound like a classic 80s band, like, that could have had more hits, but never heard of them. Then you look at, like, Lion. I've heard of Lion. But they, like, again, one-hit wonders if that. And that's it. Like, and of course, Weird Al is, like, the most famous person out of anything on there.
Yep.
So yeah, Weird Al is the most famous because he's the one that broke out.
Oh, by far.
The one that has had all, like, don't get me wrong. I love Stan Bush. I've interviewed the guy God knows how many times in 11 years that I've been podcasting. Whatever. Point is, you know, in 11 years of podcasting, I've talked to Stan Bush 6 different times, and basically for the Transformers stuff, whenever something like that comes around, like when he did the guitar, the epic guitar mix for Touch, and done other things for Dare and things like that, I almost got to see him in 2016. Because I was at the BotCon concert in Louisville. It was too crowded after the show, and I couldn't get over there to him.
That's fair enough. Those kind of venues get crazy anyway. But yeah, like it's funny how, like, almost nobody made it out of this, but yet it's one of the most iconic soundtracks, you know, of the 80s. Like, even people that maybe aren't even, or more casual Transformers fans, you know, if they've seen the movie at least once as a kid, they'll remember most of the songs. And, like, as much as people always say, oh, Transformers, it was just a giant toy commercial, I almost feel like the movie was like a giant music video.
Yeah, I can see that.
It kind of really was. I mean, if you think about it.
Like, every scene is tied to the song, and it's not a case of, like, you could plop any song in there. Each song is perfectly suited for the scene. Think of Hunger, right? When they crash land and he's trying to put Cup back together. Like, it wouldn't have worked, you know, with a different song in there necessarily. And they become so iconic as we listen to, like, how many times have we seen that movie? I've seen it, a couple hundred times more, probably. Like, my Betamax cassette, it's busted right at the part where Unicron blows apart, because I kept rewinding it so many times because I love seeing him explode. So, like, it gets to that point and the tracking goes way off. And again, I haven't seen it on that tape in like 10 years because I don't have a player, but, like, you know, I remember I would come home from school in kindergarten and grade one, and, like, my routine was I'd come home, and instead of watching TV, I would pop in the cassette and watch it. So that was like at least 80 times when I was 5 and like another 80 times when I was 6.
I mean, it is, even though it does have its animation flaws, because people have pointed them out for years now, it is still one of the greatest pieces of animation from the 80s.
Well, and so dramatically better than the actual show. Like, if you compare other like movies based on 80s properties or even 90s properties, they usually don't improve the camera angles, the animation quality, the shading, the composition of the shots. They're basically just like throwing up an extended episode on, you know, in the theaters. And that happened like, well, think of, what was it? Was it the GoBots movie? Rock Lords, whatever. Yeah. Probably. Like that basically just like, it's like a 5-part episode. And they just threw it up there. And they did that for so many different shows. Like even the G.I. Joe movie didn't have the same budget, you could tell. Like they really, really tried their best with this. Like, you know, it wasn't going to approach the levels of like a big Hollywood picture, obviously, because imagine what if they had given it like $15 million? You know, I think the movie was made for like less than $8 million. So I always find it funny when they're like, it was such a big flop. It's like, really? Was it? Because it didn't make the $100 million you expected it to make back then, it's probably made like $500 million in the year since on like home video releases.
Yeah. But yes, folks, if you have a chance, the link will be in the show notes. Head on over to Enjoy the Ride Records or Enjoy Tunes or whatever they're called.
They have a couple different imprints.
Yeah. So head on over there to that link in the show notes and pick yourself up a copy of the Transformers Generation 1 television score. Very, very awesome. Where can the people find you online, Alex?
You can find me online. I'm usually monitoring the Twig handle at This Week in Geek. If you want to contact me direct, you can just fire off an email to alex@thisweekingeek.net. Or I'll be lurking pretty much everywhere on Facebook.
Steve, what about you?
They can find me on the Twitters at SCP21.
I'm at TFG and Mike. Also follow at all things TFV3 on Twitter and at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates from us. I'm going to announce this here, and Steve has no idea. He kind of has an idea, but he has no idea. Next year, in the 36th anniversary of Transformers, All Things Transformers and the Geekcast Radio Network is going to be launching a top 100 Transformers characters countdown.
Somebody must not have read my Facebook post earlier.
I read the vote.
So what you're saying is Transmutate number one?
Ah-ha-ha.
Megatron. Yes.
Oh, now, because it's top 100, you could have multiple iterations of
That's Megatron. The thing. That's we have to avoid. Avoid.
Because let's be honest, even before we get into it on the actual top 100, we all know that Beast Wars Megatron is better than the original, and that's going to start fights.
He is better. Because he actually did something the original didn't. He took over Cybertron.
And you know what? I'm actually willing to say that Optimus is better too. Only because like they did more characterization on, they gave more personality on Beast Wars.
Optimus Primal, yeah.
And he succeeded too.
But yeah, that should be a good one. That's actually going to be hard though, like, because how many fans actually know 100 of them?
Like, and again, like, you have to figure this out behind the scenes, but like you just mentioned, it could be any character from any iteration kind of thing. The way I'm thinking of it for that is like the characters that say fit in the IDW comics that are just like Rung. He's a comic character from IDW. He has not been, to my knowledge, in any other media.
So as long as this made it to a cartoon or movie sort of thing?
Uh-huh. It could be anything. I mean, I'm okay. Just saying, though, like it could be any character.
Yeah. I'm probably going to come up with the
guidelines.
The,
Yeah, I'm going to come up with the guidelines for it because I have an idea of how I want to lay it out so that it doesn't get confused. Because there's so many different iterations, I'm going to create three-letter acronyms for every series.
Fair enough. Just
to kind of keep it kosher and clean, and that way we can kind of filter through.
I already know who's going to be number one now. It's going to be Waspinator, but it's going to be Starscream possessing Waspinator.
Starscreaminator.
Starscreaminator. Sure. There you go.
Because, I mean, yeah. I mean, can you think of anything better?
Nope.
In the top, pretty high up, we're going to have Dinobot.
Oh, yeah. Dinobot definitely deserves top 25 at least. Absolutely. So, yeah, that's coming next year from us here at the Geekcast Radio Network and all things Transformers. We've done, is it Steve, 5 or 6 top 100s?
I think we've just finished our 6th one with the wrestling one.
Yeah.
And I'm getting totally destroyed by the comments. And I keep saying, bring it on.
That's funny. We have no idea when another All Things Transformers will come up, folks, because we're doing this simply because we find something we want to talk about. It's going to sit here and, this is what news sponsor website of TFW, whatever. This is their toy sponsor, and these are the... I'm not doing that anymore. So
no, you know what? I think like anytime that there's like a new show announcement or, you know, a new product line of something comes out that we find interesting, you know, we'll hop on. Or hey, if maybe they put out more records, or maybe there's, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we start getting, you know, new DVD releases. I don't know how long Shout Factory still has the rights for, but don't be surprised if we start getting Blu-ray releases of TFG1.
They did blue Shout, I think, still does have it. They did a Blu-ray release of the movie. So there is that.
And they said it was that release was a 4K remaster. So who knows? Yep. There might be a 4K release eventually too. And if there is, that means that we'll get new digital copies online too. So, you know, that would be something interesting. The only thing they can really do now, like, is they've released all the Japanese ones too, right? Would be, if they really wanted to, it would be do dubs for some of those. And then
We tried to get them, and we tried to get that done when Headmasters was coming out, because we were doing a dub of it on TFCOG years ago. I played Scourge, and I could play him just like the season 3 voice. Or season 4. Either way. We heavily produced one of the dubs and sent it to them, like high quality and everything. And they're like, we can't use it. And they're like, even though like they can't get any of the people back, or half the people are dead, or, you know, it's
probably a rights weird thing. Where
it is, but it was so well done that they should have just hired all of us. Conceited is.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it turns into, like, you're doing a fan project, but you see that happen occasionally online where it'll pop up, in like fan translating communities. Like, there's entire websites devoted to doing subtitles for shows that never got subtitles. And I know at one point they started doing the dubs for those sorts of things too. And I guess it just depends on how dedicated people get to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we had a number of episodes done, so it would have been nice.
Yeah, it's neither here nor there.
Absolutely. I think that's going to do it for us. We're going to close out with a couple of the cooler tracks from this, and we will catch you next time here on All Things Transformers.
Excellent. Yes.
Some ho-hos. Mash 'em, stick 'em in the stew.
I wish to speak to my lawyer.